Welcome to the Running in the Center of the Universe podcast. I'm Ashland Dave, and I'm recording live from my podcast studio in Ashland, Virginia. Thanks for coming along.
And this is Ashland Dave, and this is the Running in the Center of the Universe podcast, episode 246. It's the week of July 27th, 2017. Thanks for coming along. Thanks for downloading the show. And thanks for coming back. If you're a previous listener, if you're a loyal listener from way back, I certainly appreciate you sticking around and continuing to listen to the podcast. And if you're a new listener, I would ask that you don't judge the entire podcast on just one show, which I'll get to in a little bit. I had an experience with a listener who was kind of one and done, hit it and quit it, as they say. And I'll talk a little bit about that. But I am grateful that you download the show and come along and to see what I have to talk about for this episode. The name of the episode is going to be Do Two Wrongs Make a Right? And I'm not going to really harp a whole lot on the two wrongs, but I'll throw it out there to see what other listeners think, if two wrongs do make a right, because I don't think they do, but that's just my opinion. And since I do the podcast, you get to hear lots of my opinions. I'm also going to, I got a whole kind of stack of stuff here. I'm going to talk a little bit about the third rail issue that is happening here in the center of the universe. It's a little bit running related, only because it would have probably at some point in the future affect running routes here in town. Talking about a third railroad track. Ashland is a town of about 7,000 people that sits kind of right in the heart of Hanover County, which is kind of a tilted rectangle-sized county in the Richmond metro area here in Central Virginia. And if you're familiar with Hanover County, you know all this. But for the listeners out there who are not, or perhaps are listen to the show but don't really know where I live or what this community's like, Interstate 95 pretty much bisects Hanover County. It goes right up the middle, coming out of Richmond, Henrico County, through Hanover, pretty much right through the middle of Hanover County to the eastern part of the town. The 95 does go through the town and then heads up to Caroline County, Spotsylvania, and then on up to Northern Virginia. And the Federal Railroad Administration has directed the Virginia Department of Rail and Public Transportation to perform a study for the Southeast Region High-Speed Rail Project. And so we have two railroad tracks that go through the middle of the town. These are owned by CSX, and that is where they want to put the third rail. Well, the way the tracks are set up through the town is the reason the town was founded in the first place around the turn of, the turn of last century, but 1899 into 1900, that century, which I guess is what the turn of the 20th century, since we're in the 21st century now. So along the railroad tracks, which is a mile and a half, through the town there, where you have the college, Randolph-Macon College, and you have turn-of-the-century historic homes, large homes, and we're one block to the east off the track. So we don't live in like one of the historic big houses. We live in a house that was built in 1989, but it serves our purpose. But the town grew up around the railroad, so it was a railroad town for the technology at the time, not to mention it was actually here during the Civil War. Matter of fact, the Hanover Arts and Activity Center, which used to be a church, which is right there on the railroad tracks, was actually a hospital during the Civil War. And troops went through on the railroad tracks through Ashland when it was a really small area. And then over the after the Civil War and into the 20th century is really when homes were being built along the tracks, and which we call Railroad Avenue or Center Street. Well, so there's two tracks that are parallel going north and south. And then to the east and to the west, there's a parallel street that on the right side of the tracks, it's northbound. That's one way. And then on the other side to the left, to the west of the tracks, is the southbound lane. And that's one way. And with the option of a third rail, which will be able to carry the high speed trains and then more freight, which I'll get to here in a second. That's going to take out one of those streets, and that's at least the plan that I've educated myself about this as much as I can, and that is apparently the plan to add that third rail, because you can't fit a third rail along the existing two rails. Those existing two rails are going to stay there. So what that would mean is that people can't access the front of their houses from the street. There'd have to be some kind of alleyway constructed behind the homes where they could access their houses. You know, a lot of those houses have the driveway right in the front. Some don't. Some, the houses that are on the corners, because there's, you know, it's a grid. Well, I guess you don't know unless I tell you. The Ashland is kind of a grid system street layout. So some of the houses on the corners will have driveway access on the side street. But the majority of the homes have driveways right from the front. And so that's going to take out driveways, front access to the homes. And an alleyway would have to be created behind the homes for people to access their house and have some kind of driveway to bring a vehicle right up to the house. I mean, that's what you do. You don't park unless you live in this is a town, not a city, where it's block after block of row homes where, you know, you park on a street wherever you can find a spot and you walk to your house, even if you have groceries or whatever. So that is very, you know, that's upsetting to a lot of people that that potential option is there, especially homeowners. And we're not so much affected by that, although the alleyway will be built across from our house, or if it's on the west side of the tracks, we wouldn't be so much affected. However, the thought of having a high-speed train going through the town here is unsettling. We were in Europe, or in Italy, last summer, and where we actually were staying at a villa in Tuscany, believe it or not. It was beautiful, kind of a once-in-a-lifetime situation. And in the distance, you could see the high-speed rail train going through the countryside, and those things roll along really fast. And we had another occasion where we were taking the train into Florence, and we were at on the platform, and a high-speed train came through the station, and they don't stop. And I mean, they're just really fast, and it's scary how fast they are. And that kind of, I would assume the train would slow down coming through Ashland. But if it's high speed, why would it slow down but so much? And so there's a lot of things going on with this that has got a lot of people concerned. And our elected officials here, the mayor, Jim Foley, is on top of it. And there's also a local citizen, Kristen Ryle, who lives about a block and a half away from us. She lives right on the tracks, has a beautiful Victorian-style home right on the tracks. Just beautiful. She's always out working in the yard. It's a beautiful house. And I'm friends with her husband as well. She's on the committee, and I think she's really doing right by the town. She's interested in their staying on top of the information, and then they get the information out to regular citizens like me who can't go to meetings all the time and stay up with every little thing and have constant conversations. But what's happening is there has been a Western bypass option proposed, which would go through farmland. A church would be taken down, and the rail would go through there. You know, people, there are farms out there that have generations of people living on them, where people parcel off and build a home for their child, and then it goes down the line. I heard one story where a girl who's 17 spoke at a recent meeting where she would be the eighth generation that would live on the family land, and so she looks forward to one day to building a house on that family land, and she would not be able to if there was a Western bypass. So you have the people that live out in the western part of the county, or just west of town, not really the western part of the county. They're against that. You have the people in the town that are against the third rail, and then a third option has been coming up, and then there's apparently a tunnel option that's been proposed, and which is part of the problem is the lack early on in this process was the Virginia Department of Rail and Public Transportation failure to get out accurate information to what was happening. And I'm going to kind of go off on some little tangents here. The whole thing kind of blew up last year when surveyors were coming out and surveying people's land west of the town, and they did not know why their land was being surveyed or why surveyors were asking for access to the land. And that's when a lot of them heard about, well, that your land's being surveyed for a western bypass of the town for high-speed rail transportation. And that was just not good. I went to a meeting at the high school last year where it was just really bad. And people were very upset that people were showing up on their land wanting to survey it, and they had no idea why it was, you know, why people were requesting access to the land. And, you know, people get very, very scared and upset and angry landowners do when the ownership or their land is being threatened, especially by the government or a department of the government. And I can understand that. We're not going to experience it really, I don't think, where we live because we have such a small lot. But I do understand other people's anger about that. So that was a little bit of a surprise. And then after people started educating themselves about the situation, people were saying, oh, well, there's already a railroad track that goes east of town. It's owned by a different railroad called Buckingham Branch. And people were saying, well, why can't the third rail just be built on that? Well, then that started getting, there's a whole community east of I-95 that live in these subdivisions that are in the town now or partially in the county, and there's beautiful homes being built out there in new subdivisions. And we're able to link that to me and my running group were able to link that area up to our running routes because there's a couple bridges over the interstate that we're able to get over safely. And so there's some beautiful homes over there. We've gotten familiar with it. And so now those people are organizing to combat an eastern bypass. So, and then at the most recent meeting, which was Monday night at the Randolph-Macon College, there was talk of a tunnel going under the town. There was questions, why was that never thought about? Why was the eastern bypass never really considered? Just this western bypass and this third rail through the town, where it seemed to be the only things were being considered by the State Department or the Virginia Department of Rail and Public Transportation. And there was a lot of back and forth about, well, this information never went out early. And then there was, oh, that wasn't our intent. We're not trying to be sneaky. From the very beginning, it's just kind of been a little underhanded is the way it seemed. Obviously, now everything's exposed and a lot of the information is being forced out by citizens that are making inquiries. And so what would happen if that third, and a lot of this probably wouldn't happen from what I'm told, 2026, 2028, you know, by that point in time, that is, 10 years from now, I don't even know if we're still going to be living here. I will say this though, if a third rail is built through here and you got trains that are, you know, rolling through here at fast, and I'll talk about the freight issue here in a second. You know, I don't know what kind of quality of life is going to be here, because here's the situation. You have barriers that go up blocking the street when a high-speed train comes through. You have raised platforms. They've shown these designs. I've looked online and seen a lot of the stuff. And it would divide the college. It's going to there's four crossings here in the town that would have some kind of barriers that would go up to so people don't drive in front of the train. I mean, we already have a problem with that now. People driving into under their crossing arms. It's crazy. And those trains are only going 25 miles an hour. But here's the biggest issue that came up in the first meeting I went to last year. And this is really, I haven't heard this disputed yet. The real issue here is not necessarily, it doesn't seem like it's the high-speed rail passenger transportation, because what we learned at the meeting from state officials was that a high-speed rail, which is called the DC to RVA, Washington, D.C. to Richmond, Virginia, would decrease the travel time by rail by only 15 or 20 minutes. And that's, you know, from here to D.C. is a two-hour drive, generally speaking, with no traffic. So you're talking a high-speed rail train affecting all the people that live in this community or even west of this community or even east of this community. Is to convenience people who are going from Richmond to D.C. to decrease their travel time by 15 to 20 minutes. What we learned, what was the real issue here, is so CSX can move more freight on the rails. And I don't know if that means, whoever moves freight by truck or rail, would they choose CSX more because it's more efficient and quicker to move freight on rail than it is through 18-wheeler trucks? I don't know. But that seemed to be really the backbone behind this. Now, CSX owns that property, those rails that go through the town. And I presume they could do with it what they want. And then, of course, through eminent domain, if they get the government to get on board, then they can take that road and they can take people's property along the front of their yards to build that third rail or to put in another street. Some of those houses are pretty close to the road. So there's a lot to, so once I heard about, I learned about the, it's only a difference of 15 to 20 minutes from Richmond to D.C., you know, I thought to myself, well, you know, if you need to get there that quicker, then maybe you should move closer to D.C. and not live in Richmond. If you need to be up in D.C. 20 minutes faster, you should move up to Spotsylvania. Then there's also been a lot of talk that really the high-speed rail is really more to benefit the people who live in Spotsylvania and above, the above counties going north, so they can get to D.C. quicker. But we're going to be impacted, so people who live north of us can have high-speed rail. So there's a lot of issues here. On Facebook, these forums and through commentary, through newspaper articles. When you read a newspaper online, you can see what people comment on. There's a lot of emotion out there, and so we're watching that a whole lot. We're hoping for the best. I don't really think a tunnel's a good idea because that's going to tear up that whole street. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. Maybe we won't be here. We're not lifelong Ashlanders. We moved here to experience small town living, which we have. We wanted to raise our daughter here. We moved to Hanover County in 1998, moved into the town in 2005, into this house. So we've been here 12 years. My daughter's getting ready to turn 16. She'll be in college in 2 years. And then after college, you know, she'll be out and hopefully, you know, making a living somewhere, I would hope. And I would think that at some point when she settles down and finds somebody to marry, decides to start a family, I don't see why we would really want to be too far away from her. And I guess once we all, Monica and I, retire, we would probably move to where she is just to be close, and with her permission, of course. So Ashland is not where I'm going to die, that's for sure. But I am concerned about my neighbors and their property and their quality of life. The biggest concern is that this Ashland is about 7,000 people. It's the only small town in the metropolitan Richmond area. And it's a very unique, quirky place that I like a lot. And I would hate to see it divided by a high-speed rail train. It's cool that we have the passenger trains that come through, the Amtraks. It's cool that we have the freight trains come through. It's kind of a sleepy area. They slow down. You know, a lot of people do recreation out on the road, and they're riding their bikes and walking. And I would hate to see all that go because of half the street is gone. But that's just, I guess that's the way it is. I'll have more to say about this as time goes on. And if you listen this long in the podcast, I appreciate that. I'm going to move on to some running stuff now. Okay, did two wrongs make a right? In my last podcast, episode 245, I did a race report on the Night Train 50K, and I got I always give my email out there, ashlanddave@gmail.com. I do ask for feedback and ask for people to send me an email and tell me where they run, what they do, and I don't necessarily look for feedback on the show because I'm not necessarily looking to make improvements. I just kind of put out a consistent show. You know, initially it's 200 downloads right away, and then over the course of time it gets up to about 500 per show. So I would say there's a pretty decent sized listening audience out there. I'm not doing the podcast to get more listeners. I'm just doing it to engage some people in conversation. But what happens is when you send me an email, then I can engage in a conversation, and that's at ashlanddave@gmail.com. Where I cannot engage in a conversation is when somebody puts up a review on iTunes, in the iTunes store, where the podcast, you can find the podcast at iTunes. Just search Ashland Dave or Running in the Center of the Universe. In fact, I'd encourage you to do that if you have iTunes, so you can read this review that a person named Recycle Saurus posted on July 13th of this year. And I'll just read it, and then I'll make some comment on it. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about, do two wrongs make a right? Before I read the review, I'm just going to mention what it was about. In the last show, I finished a 50K just around 7 hours, a little over. And right at the end of the race, this guy came flying up behind me and beat me right at the finish line. And my commentary in the show was about how I didn't think that was too cool, especially in an ultra. It's one thing, it's a 5K or a 10K. Where they're giving out age awards, things of that nature. In ultras, there's I think one male winner, one female winner, and that's it. And this is the kind of race where you get a magnet at the end of the race. So you're not even getting a finishing medal. It was 60-some finishers. And so to have somebody come up there and kind of, you know, it does sound kind of shitty on my part to kind of steal your finish line glory by, you know, chickening you right at the end, I thought was kind of crappy. And so I commented on it in my podcast, because it's my podcast and that's where I can share my opinion. And then this person can obviously share their opinion. But what I would hope is that somebody would do that through an email where I can then comment, have a discussion, as opposed to just reading the review here. So this is probably the only bad review out of, I guess I've got about 36 on there over the years. And I don't really check this that much, but when I did check it the other day, because I was trying to see how the podcasts line up. If I was, say I was a new listener going to iTunes and I found it, you know, how do they line up and what information did they put out there? Because I hadn't been on iTunes looking at my podcast in a long time. But this was posted July 13th by a user called Recyclesaurus, and the title of it was called Petty. I got 2 stars out of 5, and it says, quote, "First time listening will be my last. Ashland Dave spent most of his hour-long race report for the Night Train 50K bad-mouthing another runner and informing the audience how they could look him up. Not cool, Dave," unquote. So I clicked on, was this review helpful? I clicked on no. So I did not think that was helpful for me at all, or I don't think that's helpful for a new listener. This is the issue I have with that. Okay, so if Recyclesaurus thought that what that runner did to me at the end of that race was okay, then I mean was not okay. All right, I'm losing myself here. Let me gather my thought here, and then I'll be right back. Okay, I'm back, and it's complicated, and I don't want to harp on all this, but here's the thing. First of all, Recyclesaurus doesn't have any other reviews for any other podcasts or anything else on iTunes. When you click on their, highlight their name and click on it to see what other reviews they're not linked to anything else. So whoever that is probably set up an account, or likely set up an account just to do a review on mine, so they don't want to be known. We got that going on. Of course, the internet's full of that. But if he or she thought, or if he or she was okay with what that runner did at the finish line, then why take issue with me talking about how to look that person's name up? That's my question. And then if Recyclesaurus, whether it's a he or she, wasn't okay with what that runner did, then why badmouth me in an iTunes review talking about how I badmouth somebody else? And so that's where I asked, the two wrongs make a right there, okay? In the iTunes reviews, you have no way to comment on that. I'm not going to contact iTunes and complain about anything. That's Recyclesaurus's opinion. The review will stay up there. I don't care. You know, I'm not going to go challenge it or anything. It's there. People can read it. You know, at the beginning of the review, the person said, you know, first time listening will be my last. You know, I've done over 200 podcast episodes for this show. If you want to judge it on one, that's fine. You know, it's a free country. If you live in the United States, it's a free country. You can do whatever you want. You can express your opinion any way you want, just like I do. So I don't have a huge issue with it. It's just that it sounds like that Recyclesaurus was okay with what that runner did. So if you were, and it was in a public place, then why take issue about having that person's identity possibly exposed? That's my question. So why do it through the anonymity of the internet through a one-time hit it and quit it review of a podcast that's been around since 2008? I don't know. So I was a little, you know, after I read it, I was like, man, that kind of stung a little bit. But then I realized that's just the way social media is. I guess iTunes included on that, and people can say and do whatever they want. I'm not gonna worry about it too much. So that's where, you know, Is bad mouthing somebody to complain about them bad mouthing, does that make it right? Especially when you do it in a public forum. And, you know, I ask the people sending me an email at ashlanddave@gmail.com. That way I can at least start a dialogue, as opposed to, so I can't start a dialogue with Recyclesaurus whatsoever. But I did, in the email bag, I did go back and forth with a few listeners in reference to the commentary from last episode. And possibly have changed my perspective. So I'll get into that. And that's why I would hope that people who do listen to the show for the first time give it another chance. If you're interested in Pretty much just real commentary about the way I look at things. Not everybody's going to like it, but some people do, and they come back and listen. And then sometimes we have some good dialogue, and I think I have changed my perspective. So it's taken me 25 minutes to get to that here in this episode to explain that. But I think my perspective about what that runner did to me, and I wasn't insulted or anything. I thought that you know, if you're gonna come charging down to the finish line after 7 hours of running and walking in you know, godforsaken humid conditions, and then you're gonna chick somebody right there at the end like that, I just thought that was kind of crappy, and that's just my opinion. Other people might not think the same way, but I guarantee going into the next race, if that happens to me again, I am going to have a different perspective and a better one. And so I learned through getting some feedback from the show. However, that was because I was able to dialogue with somebody as opposed to just reading a review on iTunes and not able to engage that person in any kind of dialogue. So with that being said, why don't we get into the email bag section of the show. So you checked in for this episode, which we did have some emails. So let's check the email bag section. Let's check into the email bag section of the show. All right, heard from Shelly. Shelly's a longtime listener, and she is a firefighter up in Pennsylvania, but lives in Northern Virginia, if I'm not mistaken. And I think she commutes up there working the, whatever it is, 24 on, 48 off. Is that right, Shelly? I can't remember. But she's a marathoner, and she wrote me back right on July 4th. I wasn't able to get into the last show, and we went back and forth over some thoughts that she's having about doing 100K. And she's like, hey, Dave, hope you are well. I'm still listening, enjoying the podcast. Really like the video of Ashland that you recommended on YouTube. Really gives a nice view of the town. Also enjoyed your recap of your trip and run in Michigan. I'm not much of a sappy person either, but I felt your emotion. Thanks for being authentic and putting that out there. She is thinking about doing a race called the Devil Dog Ultras, which is in Prince William Forest Park in Virginia. They have 100 mile and 100K. My friend Lummix, another listener to the show, has also told me about that. And I believe that is a loop course. And so Shelly had asked what I thought about that. She's thinking about doing the 100K, but was really thinking that her first step would be a 12-hour race. And Shelly, I don't know how fast you run, but I would venture a guess to say 100K is definitely not going to be a 12-hour effort. It might be for you. I'm not sure. But if you've never done anything past a marathon, I would think that it was probably going to take you more than 12 hours to do 100K. I would look for the timed race first, and I think that's what I told you in the emails here. I'm kind of scanning through them. And especially if it's a loop course, you have access to your gear, you have access to support, aid stations, and it's a little easier to kind of wrap your head around it because you're just repeating something, and it's a mental game too. When I did my first 100K, I did a point-to-point just only because it was on the Outer Banks of North Carolina, which is an area that I really like. But I say go for it. Find yourself a timed race and go for it. And you'll never know until you get 6 to 8 hours, 10 hours in, whether you're gonna be able to handle it or not. And yeah, there's really nothing like going past the marathon distance. And I really do appreciate you listening to the show. And I wish you luck. And keep me posted on what you decide to do if you do that one up there, because my friend Lummix, I think, was talking about it. The only concern I had, I think, was because of when it is. I'm not exactly sure. Let's see, Devil Dog Ultras is December 2nd, 3rd. Yeah, so I'm not going to do anything, any marathons this year. I'm just going to do a couple half marathons, and I'll look. I got to figure out something for the spring. So good to hear from you, Shelly. Thanks for listening to the show. I really, really do appreciate it, and it's great to hear from you. So I heard from Thomas, and we're going to go down to he's got lots of comments about the last podcast, and he said, yeah, this is a reference to trail etiquette involving the lights. And I did hear from somebody else, had a verbal conversation about you are supposed to turn your head to the side. So I did learn something from my last race. Thomas Mueller writes, reference lights. One time I was finishing the Mohican 100 mile trash stumbling. A woman who was really into the race wrote the race reports for ultra running. She chewed me out because my headlamp shined in her eyes. Guess I wasn't thinking properly. 100-mile race, she was trashed. He says, okay, reference to passing at the last few feet in an ultra. Thomas writes, I can remember quite a few times some guy elbows me into the finish shooting a marathon. For what? 400th place? There's something sacred about ultra etiquette. One time I was going out of the covered bridge check-in at Mohican at mile 62. I passed a guy who's walking, nice wide berth. Then he comes back around me and brushed my arm. We went at it, 10K pace for about 2 miles in a flat marshy area. I was took him hard up the hill and broke him. He waffled and stopped. Crazy stuff. If you're working a pace with someone in an ultra, talk about it. Discuss early the rules of the partnership. If you're going together to the finish, that's a commitment for both. This is like a pre-race agreement. Thomas says, I usually agree with a partner that will go together as long as it works. If one slows and the other is stronger, faster guy goes ahead. The finish line. If you're with someone all the way, decide who goes in first. I never like the holding hands tie for finish. Just work it out. It's not that hard. And if you're going in and you are near someone you don't know, let them go in ahead if they are holding pace. If your steady pace takes you past, that is okay. In the last 100 yards, that's a personal call. But to blast by them in the last few feet, probably not. So I just want to repeat that because I think I agree with you there, Thomas. And if you're going in and you are near someone you don't know, let them go in ahead if they're holding pace. If your steady pace takes you past, that's okay. In the last 100 yards, that's a personal call. And then this is where Thomas, this is where my perspective kind of changed a little bit. And I have Thomas to thank for that. He says, think of the guy who passed you with compassion. What is the psychological construct in that mind? That beating you for 30th increases their self-worth, insecure in who they are, they gloating a win of you is needed. In these circumstances, I calm myself by saying we can't control other people's actions. Well, enough rambling. He's back into 5 mile runs. Sounds good, Thomas. And I do. When you wrote, think of the guy who passed you with compassion. That's where my perspective changed because I wasn't doing that, and I just kind of needed somebody to tell me. So, thanks, man. Appreciate that a whole lot. Let's see. Heard from. Down Under Dave, heard from him on earlier this month. He said the race report was very enjoyable. And yes, I too find some people's need to compete over the last few yards of a race somewhat silly. It happened to me once when a guy I had been shuffling along with for a couple of hours decided to have a sprint finish without telling me. Bastard. Anyway, don't sweat the small stuff. Just remain comfortable with who you are, as I know you do, if that makes sense. Hope the weather cools down. He's having chilly weather and Flinders Island, Australia, Tasmania, Australia. No snow, but heavy frosts and winds. It's hard for me to imagine it's been so hot here. Thank you, Dave. I appreciate that. I'm still thinking about that. The podcast is out there. It's done. I just wonder if someone has a hard time, if they agree with what that person did and it was fine, then why be... you can be bad at the bad, be mad at the bad mouthing, but why not identify the person? What's the difference? Heard from an older listener that I haven't talked to in a while, Steve. He's back in Ashland. We went up and did a 50K together. I rode up together into Dahlgren some years back. He did his first one and smoked it. Hey Dave, it's been a while. Have been listening to the podcast lately, or running much lately, so I thought I'd shoot you an email. My wife and I bought a house in Montpelier, which is in Hanover. And now that all the painting and moving is relatively under control, I've been running again. He hated running in Henrico. Everybody's trying to run you over. He's now 15 minutes away from Ashland. He said people actually, he ran in Ashland the other day. He said people actually told him good morning. And he's going to be training for a half in November. And asked me if I'm doing the 50K in August. I was like, nah, definitely not. I'm not doing any more hot weather races, Steve. You can listen to the last podcast and figure that one out, episode 245, and you'll see why. I just can't do it anymore. It can't be good for me. There's just no way. Okay, I heard from Neil. Now, Neil Richard always gives a good perspective, and this has also helped me change my perspective. Okay. Dave, I'm slow and catching up on your podcast while on vacation. Went on vacation, just now getting back. Okay, your question in episode 245. Here's my thought. If you're a jerk to me on the course, I'm going to try to pass you at the end because screw you. If you're not a jerk to me on the course and things are cool all around, then no, I'm not going to pass you with a few yards left to the finish. Like all those years ago when that lady passed you at the very end after hanging with you for miles, it's just not cool. So let me just stop right there and explain what he's talking about. Several years ago, I did the Dahlgren 50K, and for like the last 6 to 7 miles, I ran and walked with two females, and I carried one of them who it was her first 50K, and she was just really, really, really not having a good day, and wasn't even sure if she was going to finish or not, and I was encouraging and whatnot, and I said, hey, let's do run walk intervals, and we'll get you to the finish. Well, about 50 yards to the finish, she just sprints and finishes, you know, well ahead of me, even though I carried her ass the whole way. And then after I crossed the finish line, completely ignored me. I went up to try to talk to her. Just, it was like she was in some other world, and I just thought it was rude. But maybe I'm too sensitive. Anyway, so that's what Neil is referring to. At least that's my memory of it. Okay, back to his email. In fact, it's my biggest fear. I tend to sprint at the finish, so when I see someone in front of me, I try to gauge if I have enough time to finish with them or if I should hang back and finish after them. At a 50K last year, I ran into this issue where there were two women walking in front of me towards the finish. We had maybe 100 yards to go. I was barely running, but I knew I had enough pep to pass them with plenty of time because they were in the 100K distance walking very slow. So to me, that was okay. There was more than 3 seconds between our finish time. I had time to catch my breath, get my buckle, and walk away before they finished. But because I like to sprint at the end, coming in close to somebody else during an ultra is always a worry for me. Road races, 5Ks, half marathons, marathons, I don't care. I'll sprint past you just because I can and want to. So I guess ultra runners are more polite. Speaking of trail etiquette, I usually turn my head to the right when I pass an opposing runner at night and wearing headlamps. It takes enough of the major glare out of their face but leaves you enough light to see by. I've seen some people cover their lamps and that's fine with me. I've done that before too, but find it throws my balance off a little bit. Coming into an aid station, I try to turn my headlamp off. Sometimes I forget or I'm too much of a space cadet to think about it. And that was an excellent email. One last email he sent, when I told him about the bad iTunes review, because I told him I'm surprised someone would go to the trouble of writing a review after listening to just one show, and I've done over 200, so maybe I was thinking maybe I'm too hard on the guy. He says, who knows, I thought you were pretty nice to call him out and ask why he did it and then to send you an email. If it were me, I would have sent you an email and either apologize or explain that my brain was fried or something. Oh well. So I've got a new perspective now, and sometimes it just requires talking with other people to get a different perspective. And so I think if this was to happen again, first of all, I would never do this to somebody else. I just wouldn't, because I just feel like people that run ultra marathons are kind of a whole separate breed of people. Even us middle and back of the packers, you know, where the true endurance is, it's I guess at that point, you're not really racing other people. You're kind of racing the whole idea of doing an ultra. And I'm going to get into a whole different – I'm going to get into my daughter's perspective on swimming here in a second before I end the show, which gave me a completely different perspective. So I've got a lot of different ones going on. But I just wanted to thank Neil. If it was to happen to me again, I'm not going to get all bent out of shape. And I didn't get bent out of shape that night. It was just in – retrospect is like, why would somebody do that right at the end? But maybe the brain was fried, like you said, Neil. Are they in some La La Land or something, or they just are focused on, or it's the first one? All right, my cat is making some very strange noises. I'm not really sure. I don't know if you can hear that or not. Okay, so Neil, thanks for the email. You definitely helped to change my perspective. Good to hear from you. And heard from Midlo Pete. He was at the 50K. We did not hook up that day. He writes, congratulations on the Night Train 50K finish. I really enjoyed listening to your podcast recap of the race during my run tonight. He said it was tough listening to it because he started the race but ended up dropping. However, it was not for the reason that I might think. He says, sorry enough for connecting at the race. I got there a bit later than intended, then met up with a friend who was crewing. They had to work out their plans. He only had a few minutes before the start to look around. And he said the start was very low key, so it actually took him by surprise. That's true. So I did not see it at the start. However, I do think over the course of the race, I figured out who your wife was. Because only assuming she was the only one with two teenage girls. I saw them at multiple places and thought about saying hi, but figured it might be a bit odd, and I was a sweaty mess, so I did not. Pete, you should have done that, and here's why. Because it would have totally, she would have got a kick out of that. Over the years, I've run into some people here and there that I've known from that have recognized my voice from the podcast. It's always cool to say, hey, you Ashland Dave, by any chance? And, it would have been really cool if you had done that. So next time around, if the conditions repeat themselves, please do. She'll get a big kick out of that. Regarding the race, I agree with your sentiment. The heat and humidity suck. My body's not made for running in the heat. Although I think my Keys Ultra learnings helped me as I was walking. I was taking enough water and Gatorade, using ice efficiently. However, I did fall off my fueling in terms of gels early on, and I think that left me a bit stupid at the aid station in Farmville, which ultimately led to my demise. At that aid station, I changed my socks, shoes, shirt, and hat, and grabbed a fresh drink and a banana, but then left quickly as I was frustrated that I was taking too much time. About a mile out, I realized I had not only grabbed just one drink, but more importantly, I did not have my headlamp. Rather than turn around and go back to get a light, I continued on, ending up running about a mile in the dark to the Tuggle aid station, hoping someone might have an extra light that I could borrow. I hooked up there with my friend, but our plan was that he was just going to refill my drinks, and then head home. So he left my bags and stuff at Farmville, meaning he did not have any of my lights, which in hindsight was sort of funny, as I prepared so well that I had a headlamp, a lighted vest, a flashlight, and a set of knuckle lights all in my bag and not doing me any good back in Farmville. So my friend volunteered to drive back to Farmville, grab my lights while I continued on in the dark to the turnaround. So at first I started running off in the dark, figuring I would connect with someone and run along with them until I got back to Tuggle and was able to connect with my friend to get my lights. But as I headed out of that parking lot, I felt guilty about having my friend do all that, and the heat and the bugs were still annoying, and so I just decided to call it quits. I have regretted that decision ever since, as I felt like I could have finished, and more importantly, I would have received the cool magnet you described. I finally got over it, chalked it up to a tough lesson learned, but then was bummed again listening to your great recap. At least I got a 22.5 mile long run in. By the way, to your question, I think I might have also sprinted by you at the end with a good race bro comment, but I would have said it with a pat on the back on the way. Congrats again, and look forward to eventually connecting at a race. Again, so I think some people are getting what I was saying in the last show, and although my perspective has changed, I think I'm just going to be a little bit more understanding now, and so that'll be that. And Pete, I really do appreciate the email, man. And let's hook up someday at a race, and maybe hopefully it'll be a 50K somewhere, and we can do some of that running on the course together. So very much, I really do really appreciate that. And I think that is the last one for this episode. I'm going to talk about one more thing, then I'll wrap it up. You can reach me at ashlanddave@gmail.com if you want to send me an email. I have the Patrick Henry Half Marathon coming up, and then I'm going to be doing the Richmond Half Marathon in November. Patrick Henry is the last end of August, so I'll do a race report for that. And, here's one last thing, just some food for thought. My daughter is on the swim team, and this last season, in watching her in some of the races they race. It's not, you don't just go out there for recreation. You can do that. You can just swim laps at the YMCA if you just want to do recreational swimming. But obviously she's racing, and there was a couple times where she just didn't appear to be competitive, or didn't appear to have that competitive edge to her. And I haven't talked to her about it yet, but I want to ask her about it and ask her, you know, when you're out there, are you just doing it for fun, or are you racing? Are you racing the other people? Do you want to beat them? And extrapolate or compare that to running an ultra marathon. They're not really the same, but what am I doing out there? Am I racing, or am I just running to have fun? Because if I'm just running to have fun, I can do that. I can run 50K, do loops around my neighborhood, you know? I'm not sure if they're exactly the same thing, but it does kind of give an interesting perspective, and kind of going against me getting angry about some guy chicking me at the end of a race, because it is a race. And so he's racing me. We're in the same event, we're racing the same distance, and we're close to the finish line, And who wants it more, I guess, than the next person? So maybe I've been wrong all along, and I've learned from it. So RecycleSource, put that in your pipe and smoke it. How about that? Huh? I've changed my perspective. I've learned from it. And the sad thing is that now I've got this bad iTunes review up there that I can't do anything about, nor do I care to. So this is Ashland Dave. I'm running in the center of the universe, Ashland, Virginia, reminding you to run to the finish. Keep on running. Don't forget to hug your kids. Get those training runs in. And I'll see you next time. Have a good one.